Wednesday, the 20th of September. We have with us my friend Jeff Nyquist. Jeff began a quest about 37 years ago to understand, comprehend, eventually become quite expert in anything and everything to do with the international comics conspiracy. The author of 6 books regarding this topic of international comics conspiracy. His books for sale at Amazon.com. His website is jrnyquist.blog. I say again, jrnyquist.blog, where one, sometimes two articles are written every week. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, John.
Jeff, I know that a lot of the current Russian generals, army generals, are men in their 50s on one hand. On the other, I want some response here because I don't know the answer to this. The World War II veterans who became generals in the Russian army, did many of them serve until they were well into their 70s, sometimes 80s? Is that accurate or not, sir?
I don't know that they would serve until their 80s.
But up until their...
I don't know specifically. I mean, I don't know how old Marshal Grechko or Sokolovsky were when they retired. Maybe they were around 70. I don't specifically know. Why do you ask?
Well, I ask because you talk about the Russian military is still using World War II tactics, and I know personal experience. You may enjoy this since you're kind of a military historian. When I went back, I was out of the army for 9 years. I went back in 1979, as an intelligence analyst with a Special Forces A team in the reserves. My counterpart on the other A team in St. Louis, the intelligence CO, was a World War II veteran of the German army. He was a forward observer with the German army in World War II, and here he was, my counterpart, serving as a U.S. Army Special Forces NCO. So that was decades, obviously, after World War II had ended. And so if we had that experience here in this country, I can imagine many World War II veterans still serving in the Russian military up until the 1970s, maybe even the 1980s, don't you think?
That what up to the 1980s?
Russian officers still serving in the Russian military in the 1980s, based on my personal experience here in this country.
Well, maybe, you know, if, you know, there were 15-year-olds or 14-year-olds in the Soviet Army they were taking. So if you add 40 years, yeah, they could have easily been still serving they were career soldiers. But I don't think that the age of their leaders, their generals, was the cause of the keeping their strategies and the training and the tactics and not altering it that much. I think that there's other reasons for it. And I think the main reason is the development of the operational war concept of all arms nuclear war, which is something the West doesn't understand. They don't get that concept. The Russians adapted their World War II tactics, which were successful like in 1944, in the summer of 44. They adapted them to see they believe in understanding or, you know, looking at war not at the tactical level like we do. They look at it at the operational level, which means they're looking at the massive brigades or divisions that are in a theater and how those function abstractly, right? So you don't really care what their tactics are. You're caring about how you're positioning those divisions and brigades to defeat the enemy. And so you're conceptualizing everything on that level. So they're not that leads to a different way of thinking, and so they just need these masses of men to move in the way that they dictate at the level of the operational command, which is the theater command or the army group command. So that's how they conceived of it. And then because everything is about control, organized control of what they do. And their control system or their command and control system then integrates that with nuclear strikes. So if you read Sidorenko's book, The Offensive, he talks about these large masses of tanks and men moving forward through nuclear tactical and strategic nuclear strikes, moving through the zones of radiation, you know, suffering maybe some radiation sickness or even casualties, and just, you know, waving over the enemy. What was really frightening was when the defector, Colonel Stanislav Lunev, described their, because he was familiar with their war plans. What was their war plan in the 1980s if the Soviet Union had attacked? Well, he had information that I didn't know, and I didn't know when it was released or if it was, but, and this is, you know, 25 years ago, he told me that the first, you know, they have, the Russians have a conception of strategic echelons. And now in Ukraine, people are wondering, you know, why are they using, why did they invade with, you know, National Guardsmen? Now, why didn't they use their best units first? Because in World War II and in their conception of the Cold War, their first strategic echelon are not their best troops. And so they're sort of a sacrifice. And he said, what the whole first strategic echelon, which included most, a lot of the Warsaw Pact, you know, East German, Hungarian, Polish, Czech troops, were to drive over the NATO minefields. And I didn't even know there were nuclear minefields, tactical nuclear weapons planted in the ground. Yeah, all along the Fulda Gap and other areas. In fact, the whole line was covered with this.
Whose mines were these? NATO's or Russia's?
NATO's mines.
Really?
Russia's not going to be blown up by their own mines.
Right.
They're driving into ours. And and I was astonished. Yeah, we had, and then I checked, and sure enough, it had been a secret during the Cold War. The Russians knew it. We had planted tactical nuclear devices as mines. And they figured, this was shocking to me, they figured their entire first strategic echelon was going to be destroyed in those minefields. Now going back to your original question about why would you change the tactics? Why would you upgrade the training and the intelligence and the ability to fight? Why would you go to all that expense for a million men or a couple million men, whatever it would be, that you're just going to sacrifice? They don't need any training. They just need how to drive their vehicles over the minefields, right?
Right.
So, and then the second strategic echelon comes up and has a nuclear exchange with tactical nuclear weapons with the NATO forces, and it's destroyed as long with the NATO forces. So the first two strategic echelons of the Soviet military were to be completely sacrificed, almost to a man. And then the third strategic echelon would show up, and NATO would have no missiles left and no troops left, and it would wave over the shattered defenses of NATO and go all the way to the English Channel and all the way down to Portugal and Spain, to Gibraltar, and own everything in the continent of Europe. And I said to Lunev, I said, well, then what? Oh, we grab up all the boats from all the ports and we cross the Atlantic and we go to America.
Now, is Chinese protocols similar to Russia or totally different, sir?
Well, the Chinese, in 1949, when Mao won the civil war in China, the Soviet army was there helping him.
Right.
In fact, the Soviet army in 1945 invaded Manchuria, defeated the Kwantung army of the Japanese, took all their military hardware, which is one of the best. It was a sort of a Japanese army that was held in reserve watching the Russians, gave all their equipment to Mao, their tanks and their artillery and everything to Mao. So Mao was able to massively increase his forces. And then George Marshall came over and tried to, you know, make General Chiang Kai-shek, the head of the nationalists, toe the line and form some kind of coalition government with Mao, while Mao was just being armed to the teeth by the Russians. And they got Stalin to agree, I won't send Mao supplies. Well, Stalin lied, he did. So we didn't support Chiang, and Stalin supported Mao, and Mao won. And the civil war, and of course the Soviet military is right there in China, in northern China, in Manchuria, I don't remember the exact date when they pulled out, but they were training and they were helping Mao throughout the World War II. And during that period, they were especially helping them. And they also set up the structures of the, you know, initially they called it Soviet China, and they set up the structures of the Chinese state. They helped Mao with that, and they set up the secret police. They trained Mao's secret police, which is now the Ministry of State Security. and they trained their army. They gave them they gave them Soviet weapons. So I would guess that it's very similar. The Chinese have these two Chinese colonels, for example, wrote this book, Unrestricted Warfare. Remember right. this book?
Oh, yes.
Well, yep. I think I've commented on this before. I went through this book a year or two ago, very carefully, methodically, and it caught my attention. This book is deception. Now, it's not that, you know, for a good deception, it's not that there are things that are true in the book, you know, but it's like we're going to kill you just characterized. The book is we're going to kill you with death by a thousand cuts, a thousand little tiny cuts. We don't believe in nuclear weapons. We're not going to develop a big nuclear arsenal because nuclear weapons are obsolete. We've got the tactics, right. And it's death right. by a thousand cuts, right? So, but there's a problem with this. You know, I read this, and in places in the book, they laid that on a little bit too thick. And I said, they don't believe this. Nuclear weapons are, you know, you look at Soviet military doctrine, Sokolovsky's book says the decisive weapon of the next war is a nuclear missile weapon. Well, why wouldn't it be? It hits the target and destroys what's there every time. You know, if you use a hydrogen bomb on a point within so many meters of that ground zero, everything is vaporized, including if you hit the ground, it's going to vaporize a big chunk of ground and leave a big crater. This was suspicious, that them repeatedly mocking nuclear weapons. And I said, when I read that, I said, I'll bet you they're building up their nuclear weapons. Well, now it's come out in the last year that, yes, indeed, they have built up this giant strategic nuclear weapon manufacturing capability and tactical. And they are going to, within 18 months, they're going to have over 400 strategic missiles. Now, isn't that scary?
It is scary. Now,
which means that the book Unrestricted Warfare was deceiving us. You know, it takes decades to really build up. You know, when we decided to build strategic missiles, it was in the late 50s. And by the time you get to 1976, 1980, you have these giant arsenals, right? So it took, you know, 18 years. To build this up, the Chinese have been working on this a long time, probably decided to work on it when this book, Unrestricted Warfare, came out. And now they're at the point where they're cranking out the warheads so rapidly and putting together the missiles that we're going to be caught in a position where both Russia and China have more strategic nuclear weapons than we do, and more strategic missiles than we do. Now, why would they, you know, and this was the thing, is, and it played into our belief that nuclear weapons are useless. If you talk, you know, I talked to somebody who's working, a defense contractor working with the Pentagon, and he was telling me, oh my gosh, these young guys in the Pentagon, they think nuclear weapons are just meant to sit there and look pretty. They're just a deterrent. Nobody's going to ever use them. And this was the thing that Lunev was shocked at, that Americans had this view. Even 24 years ago, he and I gave a presentation to a group of American officials. And one of the interesting things was I said, because I knew these officials, I'd read many of their books, and I told him, I said, Stan, these guys don't believe that nuclear war will ever be fought, that nuclear war is crazy. And he looked at me very puzzled, and he said, why not? because he was, that had not, in his defection, in his interactions with Americans, he had not really grasped where we were coming from. And I said, because they believe the environment will be destroyed. They believe that their way of life will be destroyed. And they don't think anybody would want to do that, to destroy, you know, civilization or destroy us. What it really destroys is the standard of living.
Right.
Which we're so accustomed to. And the Russians, by the way, they just never had that standard of living. You know, they've come closer to it since the fall of the Berlin Wall, but they just didn't have that. So it was interesting to see, because there was a CIA guy in the meeting who, you know, said, well, surely you don't believe that we're going to, you know, the Russians are going to actually use their nuclear weapons, you know, that we have these shopping malls and this wonderful stuff here, and they want that for themselves too, don't they? And it's like it was one time I saw him, he hardened his face hardened, and he said, I trained for one mission and only one mission in my 31 years with the Soviet and the Russian military, and that was for strategic all-arms nuclear war against America. That was everything. So when you're looking at what China and Russia are preparing, they're not preparing for a conventional war. This is why the Russian military is not functioning that well in Ukraine. Those troops are supposed to have nuclear weapons behind them. They're supposed to be suffering attrition rates of 80% to 90% in their victory. And by the way, the Russians haven't pulled out. You know, the Russian generals are saying, you know, we can mobilize, 10-15 million men. Well, I think that's true, but in the dire circumstance that they're going to actually need, once they've, you know, they're going to need all three strategic echelons, of course. But that means nuclear war. That means they're going to use nuclear weapons. And there's, you know,
In addition to what you're saying, and I agree with what you're saying, Jeff, tell us about the new types of nuclear weapons the Russians and Chinese have that make almost no radiation, if you would, please.
Well, this is a mistake. No, it isn't new nuclear weapons that they have that we don't. The hydrogen bomb, which is an old weapon now, which was first developed in the 1950s, is a fusion device, right? Fission is dirty, fusion is clean.
Okay.
Okay, you understand that all the strategic, now tactical nuclear weapons are still fission, you know, because they're so small. You can't make a hydrogen bomb unless they have red mercury, which they might have. Sam Cohen, who I knew, who was the maker of the neutron bomb, believed that the Russians had developed red mercury. Red mercury, mercury antimony oxide is a compound that can directly, that is the most powerful, potentially explosive in the world, that could directly cause a fusion reaction without, see, what makes a hydrogen bomb a little cumbersome is that every fusion bomb has to have a fission trigger. In other words, you have a little atomic bomb inside every hydrogen bomb.
Amazing. Amazing technology. Hold on, Jeff. Our break. Call them. It's 512-248-8252. We'll be right back.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To learn more about this amazing breakthrough, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Well, I wish I was in the land of coffee and oat, and there I'm not forgot to look away, Dixieland. In Dixie's land where I was born in early on the frosty morning, look away, look away.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen. My website is thelibertyman.com. This hour is sponsored by the Energy Cleaner. If you're tired of being tired, check out the Energy Cleaner at thelibertyman.com. Visiting with Jeff Nyquist, his website's jrnyquist.blog. I say again, jrnyquist.blog. 6 books for sale at amazon.com. If you want to contribute to his website, go to an article back in July, where there's a PayPal button that you can click on and make that donation. Jeff, we got a caller on hold here. We got Mike in Kentucky. Good morning, Mike. Mike, you're on the air.
Now I'm on the air. Okay. When I was working in another town, I worked with the son of a prominent bureaucrat who decided that he was going to go a different direction. He didn't want to, you know, carry on the family tradition of working for the government. So, and he apparently had the aptitude for it. He went into engineering school, and he said that when they got into the nuclear study of nuclear weapons and nuclear power and stuff like that, they were teaching him at the University of Kentucky that nuclear weapons were intentionally made dirty so that they wouldn't be used. And, you know, that stuck in my head, and I'm like, why would they teach these guys that, you know? And then just in the last year or two, I was reading about Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They intentionally airbursted those several hundred feet, maybe 1,000 feet above the ground, so that the blast of the heat and everything did not reach the ground directly, as far as the fireball. I guess they discovered that from the Trinity test, that when the main fireball of those nuclear weapons reaches into the dirt and the ground, that's where you create a lot of these lingering radioactive isotopes that are so contaminating. Now, you know, neutron bombs, obviously those are burst way up in the air, and they've tried to, well, they have a space treaty or something that prevented supposedly them using them in the upper atmosphere when they I guess they did that one that took the power out in Hawaii way back. I forget what the project was called, but that led to...
Well, that was actually a hydrogen bomb that caused that inadvertently. I think it was the Johnston Island test.
Well, there was supposed to be one that was burst in the upper atmosphere, almost in the reaches of space, that took out the electrical grid. And they had a project named for that.
They conducted the tests. They always airbursted the hydrogen bombs.
Yeah.
They always airbursted them.
The idea was to kill people but not destroy the real estate or the infrastructure.
Yeah, well, in Hiroshima, the actual reason why they airbursted it is that it's more effective in its destructive blast.
If you ground burst something,
the blast doesn't cover as wide an area. And if you airburst it, it's more efficient for using the energy.
Supposedly they were going for a bridge, and it actually burst over that church that stands as a memorial to it. The center part of the bomb had downward blast instead of any kind of an angle, so it left the iron structure of the dome of that church. That is supposed to be one of the most heavily Christian areas of Japan, too, which a lot of people find sinister.
Well, the reason they picked Hiroshima was not to kill Christians. The strategic bombing campaign in 1945, by the time you get to there, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and Kyoto were the only three out of 67 major metropolitan areas in Japan that had not been bombed. So they needed to hit a city that was not already in rubble.
The official story was that they were going for the industrial area, and it did miss the bridge. It hit instead.
The Hiroshima bomb was on target. The Nagasaki bomb was way off target.
Yeah, it was supposed to hit a bridge, in a more important industrial harbor area.
Nuclear weapon isn't going to be focused just on a bridge. That bomb killed 100,000 people in Nagasaki. I mean, in Hiroshima. I think it was 50,000 people in Nagasaki, and of course, the importance of the bomb. Of course, I don't know where this comes from. We're making the bombs dirtier. No, bombs were becoming cleaner because they were hydrogen, and it wasn't a matter of making them dirty. People talked about a cobalt bomb, which intentionally was to salt radiation. They talked about doing that in the Korean War. Using something like that, academics discussed it. That was never used.
Well, initially, what I meant to start out saying is that there's so much disinformation around these nuclear bombs, and you read all day on the internet and find people arguing with each other and citing stuff they claim as legitimate documents.
The studies are really boring to read, but.
Hold on, gentlemen. Hold on. We have a break. I'm right back.
Are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names, Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Home is where the hearth is. In days gone by, the hearth was the center of the home, a social place where the family would come together to spend time and cook. The warmth of the Liberator rocket stove makes a house feel like a home. So, welcome home. 100% American made, the Liberator rocket stove heats for a fraction of the cost of other methods. Your home can be safely heated with firewood or wood pellets. The Liberator rocket heater is waiting to be part of your home. This unit ships directly to your door, or you can save $300 with a factory pickup. To order, go to my website, thelibertyman.com. That's thelibertyman.com.
Is thelibertyman.com. A lot there. I have more than 200 articles and videos regarding the COVID-19 vaccination clot shot, including articles and videos by Dr. Michael Yaden, former vice president at Pfizer, former director of medical research at Pfizer. He's now saying that the COVID vaccinations are meant to kill and hurt. They're not a side effect. It's what they're meant to do. Products will help you achieve your goals, such as the energy cleaner and Liberator rocket heaters. It'll be winter before we know it. You want to stay warm, stay cozy, and save money. Check out the Liberator Rocket Heaters at thelibertyman.com. Visiting with Jeff Nyquist. His website's jrnyquist.blog. Books for sale at Amazon. And we have some comments from Mike in Kentucky. Go ahead, Mike.
I'd say that it's there's so much disinformation on the internet. It's not hard to find things that seem to contradict each other. But this kid, engineering student that I was talking about, probably was 1993 or 4 before the internet, and the conversation started by looking at the clues that were in two different movies that came out in the early 80s. One was with John Lithgow, in a fictional situation where this laboratory took over a derelict manufacturing facility in this kid's hometown, and he found out they were making ultra pure plutonium for mini nukes or various purposes, I guess, but super purified. And you know, the plot was built off the stuff that was declassified from the Manhattan Project. They gave away the shapes of the shaped charges for the Trinity device and the Fat Man. And then there was another one called, I was with Paul Newman, who played the head of the Manhattan Project, called The Fat Man and the Little Boy. And they both gave away some of the processes that were, you know, thought out to develop the implosion devices. And all that had been declassified, I guess, by then, 1983, 84. But with, and I have yet to see the new movie about Oppenheimer, but what I, in reading about that, I had found, and I think at the end of one of them movies, maybe The Fat Man and Little Boy, it gives a paragraph that says that he lost his security clearance because some of the scientific community out of Chicago had clued him in that the weapons industry around the bombs that he developed was not just to end the war. That they told him, go look at Oak Ridge, man. That facility is, they're building the infrastructure to build thousands of bombs. It's not just about ending World War II. So he lost his security clearance protesting the development of the hydrogen bomb. Does that sound in line with your research? He was, that's why he lost his security clearance.
You're on mute there, Jeff.
Who are you referring to?
Oppenheimer. Lost, he started protesting.
No, Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer had communist affiliations, and of course the in the movie Oppenheimer, you're going to see that he had a sexual thing with a Soviet spy. But you know, it's, you know, the thing is that they want to depict people who were, you know, cooperating with the Russians as heroes. So there's disinformation, because if it's fiction, look, don't pay attention to anything that's fiction. You know, read direct memoirs yourself, get it from the horse's mouth, read people who were there, from people who were there, who are reliable witnesses. Don't, you know, we get all these people, they get their idea of history from watching movies that are fiction. The writer is taking liberties, and so don't expect it to be true. And as far as, you know, movies in the 1990s against look at most of our movies have been against nuclear weapons. You got the movie On the Beach, as if the fallout in an atomic war is going to come down to Australia and everybody's going to die. Every living thing on the planet's going to die from fallout. It's just complete nonsense. Put in that book, and who put it in the book? And everybody, well, it can't be nonsense. They made a movie, and Gregory Peck starred the guy, you know. But no, it's nonsense. In fact, Australia did a study in 1980 on what would happen if, you know, 40,000-50,000 hydrogen bombs went off in the Northern Hemisphere. Would that On the Beach thing happen? And Australia said, well, there'd be a few more leukemias and cancers from the long-term isotopes thrown into the upper atmosphere, but the cancer rate in Australia would actually go down because the imported tobacco from America would be cut off. Right?
The concept of nuclear winter with 400 or 500 cities on fire?
Yeah, the TTAP study, that was ridiculous. I actually went to the trouble of reading the government study. The government wanted to find out if there was any truth to this, so they commissioned a really serious study. And I'll give you the summary at the end of the study, because there's a lot of math in it. In order to create nuclear winter, we would have to build a nuclear device the size of the Empire State Building. It would require more uranium than exists on Earth. We'd have to go to the moon to find the uranium to build it. It would cost more than the gross national product of all the countries in the world sometimes over to do it. Then we could breach the Earth's crust and cause a nuclear winter event. But that's what they calculate. So, Ray, these little firecrackers could not. I mean, you've got the Krakatoa volcano was the equivalent of 100,000 1-megaton bombs, right? So that didn't cause nuclear winter.
Well, how would all these little firecrackers going off? Without summer? You're talking about
that wasn't Krakatoa, but yeah, that was another Indonesian volcano in 1815, and we had some cooling. 1815, it did do it, and that was even more powerful than Krakatoa, but that was a nuclear winter. Just because in July a few lakes and rivers froze and there was some starvation for people who didn't have enough stored food, that it wasn't the end of the world. That even wasn't nuclear winter. You know, so
yeah,
the nuclear weapons can't, they don't have that kind of, they don't, you look at the amount of megaton of a volcanic eruption, and it's a nuclear device is nothing compared to a volcanic eruption.
enough of them, though, would just cause a lot of fires that would continue to burn out of control because there'd be nobody to put them out. The infrastructure would be so damaged, the fires would just continue.
The fires don't. You see, in order to create the nuclear winter effect, the dust and debris have to be thrown into the upper atmosphere to cause
the stratosphere, like a volcano.
Like a volcano does. And that would have to be that kind of strength to cause a nuclear winter event.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that concept. But, yeah, the year without a summer, back then you had people that had knowledge of food storage technique and preservation technique that the vast majority of people don't have anymore, I don't believe. You know,
have a lot of things in canned goods, and we've got a lot more people than we had then, but you know, the human race survived, you know, 18, 12, 13, 14, 15. We were in a grand solar minimum then, and there are more volcanic eruptions during grand solar minimum. We just had a giant volcanic eruption in the South Pacific that's going to cool things down a little bit, even up here, so over what the temperature would have been otherwise. So, you know, but no, the nuclear winter is a complete fraud. In fact, I'll tell you what, we had a defector in, was it 1982 or 83? We had a defector from a scientist who said Andropov of the KGB had put them up to this, concocting this nuclear winter theory to discourage the West from having nuclear weapons. And so they got together and a team of scientists were told to make it sound realistic and to feed it to the West. And this guy, there was a major article about him in National Review back in the 1980s about how he had defected and said, look, this thing is a fraud. We invented it. We Russians invented it.
Is that the same family name? I barely understood what you said. The same family name as that short-lived premier Andropov? Same. Did you say his name was Andropov?
Same family name. Andropov was the head of the KGB. That was Andropov shortly before he became the general secretary of the Communist Party and the ruler of the Soviet Union. He was the head of the KGB. And he
the scientist's
name was Andropov. He was tasked by Andropov with a bunch of other scientists to create this fake story about nuclear winter.
I was just trying to reference that so I could look him up. I was trying to figure out what his name was.
I don't remember his. Okay. It's been 40 years since I read about him. He was kidnapped by the KGB after his defection. At a scientific conference in Spain, the KGB kidnapped him. He was never seen again. They were very angry that he exposed that. But you can look it up.
I'm going to try.
There's a book that goes into it. I think it is Comrade J, Sergei Tretyakov's book. Tretyakov, I think, if I'm remembering right, talks about this particular caper. I think he mentions it in there. That they had, and the same thing, this is why if you go to global warming, there is a Russian Polo, he later was a member of the Politburo, he was the editor of Pravda. He actually wrote a book in 82, I'm trying to remember his name. He wrote about global warming, we need to advance this concept. Back in 82, I think, is when his book came out. So many of the things we believe that we think are true, like radiation kills everything, or there's nuclear winter, or that there's global warming, all these things actually originated in scientific institutes in Russia, ordered by their disinformation, because they fooled us so many times. It's easy for them to put this over on us because we've got so many people on the left here in our academic institutions who want to believe capitalism is bad. They're predisposed to believe that we're going to destroy everything on our own, that capitalism and the free market and freedom is awful, that we need socialism. And so
I guess you've heard of the Fermi filter, the Fermi paradox, to try to assuage the people that believe in evolution have that as a paradox. Where's all the space aliens if life is so prolific? You know, they kind of leave out the concept of these astronomically vast distances. But the Fermi filters are the idea that we would create technology that would destroy ourselves, be it, you know, the gray goo of nanotech or any number of things that we create for capitalism and or convenience. Well, we'd end up killing ourselves off, Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah, well, if what's really the biggest danger to us is the radical stupidity which socialism is an outcropping of, and so is Nazism. It's that if you just use common sense and you're decent and you're good, if you have this connection to, well, you know, what would Jesus do or what should I do? If you have this your spiritual sense and you use your brain that God gave you, you're not going to destroy yourself or your society. But people don't do that anymore. You know, you look at abortion, you look at the belief in global, you know, we're shutting down the oil industry because, oh no, we're going to overheat the planet. That's so crazy. If we shut down the oil industry, society will collapse and we'll have cannibalism. I mean, literally, this is how stupid people are. And it just gets more and more crazy and idiotic every day. You hear people, you know, look at the transgender thing, changing talking children, prepubescent children, into changing their gender. Well, you know, what little boy or little girl even knows what being a little boy or little girl is? They haven't gone through puberty. They don't understand a thing about it. They want to change their gender? And give me a break. You know, so every tomboy now is going to have gender surgery, you know, reassignment surgery. That's insane. So you look at it and it's like, well, where are the adults in the room? Well, I think there's maybe 8 adults left, you know. Because this is really crazy, and yet this is now becoming made into a law. Look at the pandemic and the way we reacted to that. You know, a country like Sweden, they didn't lock anybody down. They didn't have any more deaths. You can't stop a virus by locking things down.
You know,
even wearing
a mask,
the virus goes right through. You know, I mean, this is crazy. And we hurt our economy unnecessarily. And then a vaccine. I heard Dr. Peter McCullough the other day saying, you know, 3/4 of the people in the Western world were vaccinated, 94% of them with mRNA, and that stuff never leaves your body. And it's like, this is crazy. We've got this major health calamity now because of all these vaccinated people.
Well, I might have to go dig for Andropov's defector there and find out this nuclear weapon nuclear winter disinformation. That's
yeah. If you put in nuclear winter I've written about it before. But, you know, it's like so many details and so many subjects, sub-subjects. I can't remember everything, you know, because it's been a few years since I wrote about it. But I think it's in Sergei Tretyakov's book. Actually, it's a book about him. He gave the story to a journalist. So, but it's called Comrade J. But I think if you look online, you're going to find Nuclear Winter. I mean, Peter Pry has a chapter on it in his book, Nuclear Wars, Exchanges, and Outcomes, where he just debunks it and he gives all the citations.
I'm going to go fish a little bit. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay, thank you. We appreciate it. Our next caller is Lynn in Maryland. Good morning, Lynn. Break coming up.
Thank you, John. Good morning, John and Jeff. Boy, I am sitting here. You had me thinking. I'm glad I listened because I have a toothache. I'm going to call and order Marie's books when your show's done. Maybe there's a cure in there for my tooth because the dentist won't work. He's moved. The girl can't give you directions to his office because she only knows how to use GPS. I said, do you know how to read a book? She said, I graduated from college. I was like, okay, well, they're graduate students who can't read cursive. What does that say? Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it. What I was wondering, and this is going to sound like a dumb question, but I was wondering...
Hold on, we'll get to your question after the break. Hold on here.
Okay, thank you.
We'll be right back. to republicbroadcasting.org, smash that donate button like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio? Like, what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around, and be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Company will fix bayonets! Fix! Bayonets!
All right, we're back. Lynn, what's your question or comment for Jeff?
Okay, thank you. Also, the thing I was thinking, anybody who has access to university website, they can go to the university's library and log in, and they have access to every newspaper, journals, you know, all over the place, all kinds of information. I miss it. My question actually was, could you explain tactical nukes to me? Does it just mean something small enough you could carry around?
No, you could carry it around, but no, a tactical nuclear weapon is used for use in tactical combat. That is, it's used on small unit actions. So it's an artillery shell. I think most tactical nuclear weapons are artillery shells. They could be in a missile. They've even put them in little rocket launchers, and it's a round that has a nuclear. It's a small nuclear device,
okay.
and it causes a 1 to 10 kiloton, generally in the 1 to 10 kiloton range. I mean, the Hiroshima bomb I think was 18 kilotons, so it's a fairly small blast. Whereas strategic nuclear weapons typically were, you know, in the 300 to 500 kiloton range, you know, half a megaton or less. So that gives you a kind of an idea.
Okay. Okay.
You know, it's meant to be used. Let's say there's a town and there's a battalion in the town that's holding out. You bombard the town with a couple tactical rounds, tactical nuclear rounds. You know, it can give you imagine a 10 kiloton bomb going off. That'd definitely shatter the defense, right?
Yeah. I can only imagine though what people are playing with these days. And okay, the problem is I don't know how you educate people that don't know how to read a map. I mean, yeah, well, honestly, they don't read books. They don't read. Yeah, they don't know how to read.
Yeah, well, they can't. If they can't read a map, they don't know there's other countries. You know, I used to give a test to college students where I would give them a blank map of the world and say, put the continents and oceans. And a third of college freshmen and sophomores, this is more than 30 years ago now, couldn't do it, you know, which means they put the Atlantic Ocean where the Pacific Ocean is. They call North America Canada or something. I mean, it was really weird what kind of answers they would come up with. That's a third of them. Now, two-thirds would get it right. That was then, right. Now, imagine what it is now. That was in the late 80s, early 90s. So imagine what it is now, right?
2008, all my instructors came in upset that their students couldn't read and do math at the first class in the semester.
They couldn't read what?
They couldn't read at a college level to do like an intro to nutrition course, and they couldn't do math.
Yeah, that's, you know, you're supposed to, you know, in order to, for me to get into college, I had to take geometry and algebra just to get into college, you know, let alone, you know, my reading level.
All right. Lynn, thank you
for
your call.
My aunt knew calculus in eighth grade.
We're out of time, my dear. Jeff, thank you. We'll have you back next week. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
That's it for the day. Getting back in supplies, your engine cleaning essential oils. Now, while you can, your firearms ammunition. Never, ever get your guns. Please have a fun, safe, productive day. God bless my beautiful county of Crawford County, Missouri, the large, beautiful state of Missouri I get to live in, the even larger, beautiful state of Texas, the large, please, God bless the United States of America.
People who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.